Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation and by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 142 for April 9th, 2014. Up on the roof. Hey, hello everyone. It's Wednesday night, and that means it's Ham Nation night. And we've got most of the typical characters on here. We're missing one guy, though. A dude named Bob. He's at a thing called NAB. That's the National Association of Broadcasters Convention out in Las Vegas. So the rest of us, the three blind mice, are going to stumble around without the head cat tonight. So that means we have Gordon West out in Costa Mesa. Hello, Gordon, WB6NOY. How are you tonight, my friend?
All is well. We've not had any major earthquakes. And York, Pennsylvania hams, your ham fest is this coming Saturday. North Central Indiana ham folks, your convention is this Saturday at the Miami County 4-H Fairgrounds in Puerto Rico. That's where we should all be. Weekend after next, it's the World Amateur Radio Day, and KP4FD, like Field Day, will have a big signal from Puerto Rico. Let's all go down there, huh? Back to you, Don.
That's awesome. A friend of mine, actually, who was Young Ham of the Year a few years ago, Andrew Koenig, KE4GDB, was just operating from Arecibo down in Puerto Rico. So that's cool. I tried to make contact with him, but couldn't quite make it. He actually had to leave before I got off work. So let's go a couple of hours to my north to my friend W5JDX, George Thomas up in Jackson. I think we've got a pretty good smoke and solder on tap tonight, don't we?
We do, Don. You may notice the display from my IC7700 looks a little bit different over here. We'll be talking about that later. And you might see a lot of prizes here behind me. They started coming in. The UPS man just showed up right before the show tonight. So I've been unpacking, and I know there's another big box coming, too. So we've got some great things we're going to be giving away over, it looks like, probably the next few months. And I think Cheryl is with us tonight, too, and she's looking for some questions in the chat room there. So throw some in there. We'd like to answer some questions and see what's on everybody's mind a little later on.
Yeah, we're going to have Dale in here, too, with the video stuff. Well, the UPS guy, or actually UPS lady, came to my house today, too, and brought something. And it smokes, but it has nothing to do with solder. I got a new box of cigars today, so those came in the mail today. So I'm excited about that. And we're going to show you some pictures of my ICOM 7000 install in my car. I finally got that finished, and a few other things that we've got on tap tonight for the show. And but first, let's go back out to the West Coast and see what Gordon has got for us with short shots. Gordon.
All right. Well, we came from an antenna party. And anytime those of you are listening or viewing are invited to an antenna party, be prepared for a little workout. And let's take a look at our antenna party. Here we are taking down a three-element Cushcraft beam, and it was going to be transported to another person's house. We found out that, sure, the elements came off the boom, but unfortunately, none of the boom elements would separate from each other. But that's common, and if you set them with a set screw and a small little sheet metal screw, those sections will have good continuity. There's a little roof tower also coming down from our little antenna work party. You always want to bring to the antenna work party someone with a pick-em-up truck, and here we are. We got Mikey with the pickup truck. And here we are, all ready to take a Cushcraft A3 over to another deserving ham's house. Now, you might think that it takes a lot to get these things put together, but not really. Now, notice the A3 has the traps in them. And when we finish off here, we'll tell you how we did a good trap check. But we've got the A3 going up on the new roof. We had plenty of help from the wind system. And they came over and made sure that the tower was standing tall and well anchored to the roof. We first reassembled the A3 elements onto the boom, did an ohm meter check, and even in this position, we did an SWR check, and it showed that each of the bands, including 40 meters, dropped in. But we had a little problem with a rotator where the wire got cut. So here we are splicing the wire back together and making a good tight connection. Okay, here comes the A3 going up on the tower. And again, this is all within about 3 hours. This is not like a two-day deal to move the antenna. And there it is, the Cushcraft A3. We were perplexed as to whether we would hang the elements from the boom or have the boom support the elements. Well, I was not in the decision-making, so it looks like the elements are hung. And off to the left and right, that's the driven element with the little wire capacity hat on it. And the driven element acts as a 40-meter rotatable dipole. But that is the Cushcraft A3 antenna. And it was doing very well. And, of course, with any antenna party, you always got to feed the troops. And thanks to Cindy and her team, we had good food and good times for the antenna party. Now, we called to DX Engineering to find out about the trap issue. And a trap is, from Cushcraft and many of the other antenna manufacturers, a trap is a coil of wire surrounded by an outside sleeve. So if somebody says, you know, I think I got a bad trap, we better buy a new one, you don't have to buy a new one. You can go ahead and very easily inspect the trap. And the biggest problem with traps when they are loose on the boom, see how that turns back and forth, is the little screw right here has dropped out. So if you have a trap antenna, you've got to remove the little black plastic thing that's probably rotted anyway and tighten up that screw so you can't do this, which would cause the outside capacity to the LC element to make and break contact. And that was DX Engineering folks that gave me the tip on that. So the Cushcraft is up and playing, and it's doing well. We had a comment from John Scott, K8 Yankee Charlie. He says many of the antennas from Cushcraft use pop rivets, and you can see the pop rivets right here. And he said that's an area that you may want to inspect with a simple volt ohm meter in the ohm meter stage to make sure that those pop rivets have been snugged up and are making a great connection. So that was our little antenna party. We started at 10 o'clock and we finished at about 2:30, took it down from one house and put it up at another. So for those of you that are invited to an antenna party, hard hat, safety glasses, good shoes, and hopefully good food at the conclusion of putting it together or taking it apart and then relocating it. We all love a relocated antenna. That's really going to work some great DX. Thanks to DX Engineering giving us the tip that, hey, a trap doesn't go bad. It just probably has a bad connection. And by the way, we also use self-tapping screws to make sure that each of those elements that were thoroughly wedged into each other with salt corrosion from the local air here in the Pacific Ocean, we made sure that all of the connections were safe and sound. So that's it, Don, our little antenna party, and now back to you.
That's good stuff. I just had a thought. After you snug all those screws back up, in order to maybe, I don't know, weatherproof them or something, would it be a good idea to squirt? They've got this stuff now that You see the advertisement on TV all the time where they take a boat and they cut the bottom out of a boat and they put a screen door in there and then they spray this rubber stuff on the screen door and then they actually float the boat. Couldn't you hit it with some of that rubber spray stuff and maybe waterproof it a little bit more? Wouldn't that be a good idea?
You know, I think that's a great idea. In fact, when this beam was first put together, they should have put the anti-seize on the aluminum sections, but they didn't.
Exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah, because you've got dissimilar metals.
But believe it or not, even though the elements were stuck and you couldn't take them apart, they still made good contact on the ohm meter. But I agree with you. Yeah. Let's protect those areas that are exposed to the elements, Don.
Yeah, and especially if you got dissimilar metals, you've got maybe a steel or a stainless steel screw going into that aluminum metal. You've got dissimilar metals and galvanic corrosion and everything. So, yeah, anything you can do to stop that. is a good idea. And speaking of DX Engineering, they are a sponsor of the show tonight. And let's talk about DX Engineering, and let's talk about antennas particularly. Multiband antennas. A lot of times that means multi-compromise. And the ability to work more bands comes at a cost of efficiency and performance, but not with DX Engineering and their 43-foot vertical. It is the perfect fusion of size, capability, affordability, and durability. It's a great way to get off of the HF sidelines and get right in on the 160 to 10-meter action. A lot of times, some of the best DX antennas are verticals. And this one is 43-foot tall, multi-band vertical, covers everything, 160 to 10. Relatively low height, low wind resistance. It makes it easy to set up, and it's going to keep your neighbors happy, too. It comes with all the appropriate mounting place, the tilt base, stainless steel hardware and clamps, all the good stuff. You can buy just the antenna by itself, or you can bundle it with other critical DX Engineering components. And the aluminum construction means it's going to withstand all the elements for years of great HF DXing. And there are a lot of combo packs, too. Like, for instance, the radio plate, a great complement to that 43-foot vertical. It's innovative enough to be covered by two U.S. patents, and the radio plates are compatible with pretty much any commercially available vertical antenna. So you can, if you want to roll your own, that's a great way to start. Three sizes for tubing up to 3-inch outside diameter will attach to virtually any 4x4 or 6x6 wood post as well. And there's provisions to attach your coax plus 60 holes for radial attachment. It's stainless steel. It's not going to go away. It's not going to dissolve like aluminum. And it looks cool, too. Includes a stainless steel bow. That's important, man. If your stuff looks good, it's probably going to work good. As all the stainless steel bolts, nuts, and washers, too. You can get your radial wire from DX Engineering as well. 14-gauge, relaxed PVC, rolls out easy, no kinking, no twisting. 1,000-foot bulk spools. You can find out everything you know about all this stuff at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And if you want to grab any of this stuff, get your order in by 10 o'clock Eastern, p.m. Eastern. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will put that bad boy on a truck. It'll head your way tonight. Proven products, expert advice, the fastest shipping in the industry, DX Engineering. It will help you shrink the globe. Get your catalog or shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. DX Engineering, thank you so much for your generous support of Ham Nation. We do appreciate DX Engineering. You know, they've got more than just antenna stuff. They've got shack aids. There's a computer in every shack now. And look at, I retired my old mouse pad. Man, this thing is so nice. It's slick. As a matter of fact, I was drinking coffee with my DX Engineering coffee cup the other day. And when I first put this new mouse pad in there, and I swear my mouse slipped right off, and it is like going to a hockey game. I hip checked my coffee cup right off the desk. It was it's horrible. But that's the way it goes. Let's check out the news of the week now from Amateur Radio Newsline, if we can. From Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1912. These are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 9th, 2014. Amateur Radio has responded to a major 8.2 magnitude earthquake that struck off the coast of northern Chile Tuesday, April 1st.
According to news reports, the quake caused at least 5 deaths and triggered a tsunami that pounded Chile's shore with 2-meter-tall waves. Officials said that most of the dead were people who were crushed by collapsing walls. The Chilean government evacuated that nation's northern coast, and President Michelle Bachelet declared the area a disaster zone. The Radio Club de Chile has been activated due to earthquake. It is working in collaboration with Chile's National Emergency Office of the Ministry of Interior and Public Security. According to a posting on Facebook, Chilean hams have established several emergency assistance as well as health and welfare nets. These nets are operating on 7.055, 14.255, and 21.315 megahertz, depending on the propagation and time of day. The net controls are asking other radio amateurs to please keep these frequencies clear until further notice.
Heather Emby, KB3TZD, reporting. We'll have more on this story as it becomes available. Amateur radio volunteers were called out in Snohomish County, Washington, to assist in operating the Emergency Operations Center and to support communications with the American Red Cross shelters set up in the wake of the tragic landslide on March 22nd near the town of Oso. Here's Hal Rogers, KHCMD.
The slide swept a massive avalanche of trees, wet soil, rocks, and debris across the rural northwest Washington community along State Route 530. The county's Auxiliary Communications Service radio officer, Scott Honecker, N7SS, told the ARRL that his organization has been active, but at a fairly low level. Honecker said the slide damaged some of the communication infrastructure, with fire and law enforcement personnel using cell phones to keep in touch while service and rescue units, along with air operations, utilized VHF radio. Honecker said that the ham radio auxiliary communications service volunteers were coordinating their activities on the Granite Falls 146.92 megahertz repeater and using cell phones. Also, that the Emergency Services Coordinating Agency was active staffing the Red Cross shelters using their 442.200 UHF repeater near Arlington for purposes of organization and management.
At least 21 are confirmed dead, with another 30 still missing. A major solar flare Saturday, March 29th, caused a brief blackout right in the middle of the CQ Worldwide SSB contest.
One operator in the Los Angeles area was heard to comment that it was almost as if 20 meters folded up and went away on vacation. The brief X1 class flare erupted from the now decaying sunspot AR-2017 at 1748 GMT, according to a report from the Space Weather Prediction Center. The center noted that even though the sunspot is dissipating, that it still holds the potential to produce more solar flares before it's gone. The radio blackout here on Earth lasted less than an hour before propagation began to normalize.
And finally this week, the nominating season for the 2014 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. Created in 1986, this award is offered to recognize the achievements of a radio amateur age 19 or younger for his or her accomplishments in service to the nation, his or her community, or to the advancement of the state of the art through amateur radio. Nominees must reside in any of the 50 United States, its possessions, or in any of the 10 Canadian provinces. Complete details, rules, and a required nominating form are available on our website at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. Nominating forms can also be obtained by sending a self-addressed stamped envelope to Amateur Radio Newsline, Inc., Young Ham of the Year Award, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. The cutoff date for nominations to be postmarked or electronically filed is midnight, May 30th, 2014. We'll present the 2014 Young Ham of the Year Award at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Alabama on Saturday, August 16th. More info on this great ham fest is available at www.hamfest.org. We hope to see you there. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And you saw a picture of Andrew Koenig, KE5GDB, in the Young Ham of the Year piece in the Newsline video. He was 2009, I believe it was, Young Ham of the Year. He's accompanying me and my group to Dayton this year. So Andrew Koenig, KE5GDB, will be up there at Dayton this year with me. That's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have HF Mobile in the Toyota Solara convertible. So that's going to be cool. Yeah, I finally moved the ICOM 7000 from the Jeep to the Solara because I drive the Solara every day. And it's 99.9% completely installed. I'm still iffy on where I'm going to put the speaker. But you know what? It's working right now. And let's show you some pictures of that. Okay, let's put an ICOM 7000 in a 2002 Toyota Solara convertible. That's my daily driver. You remember the radio was mounted in my Jeep, which worked really nicely, and I loved having that 7000 in the Jeep. But you know what? I just don't drive the Jeep every day. I drive back and forth to New Orleans every day, 125 miles round trip, and I just can't afford to drive the Jeep on that long trip as much as I would like to. So let's take it out and put it in the Toyota. There's a little Tar Heel too with the K400 mount. You see the big toroid there. That's on the tuning adjustment wire to keep the RF off of that. There you see the little coax coming in underneath that carpeted roof. And there's the coax for the other side, plus that that tuning wire for the little Tar Heel too, going into the trunk and then underneath that trim piece and coming out right there by the seat. And I have it going underneath the power seat track, so it's not going to get cut. And there it's just waiting on the radio to go in. There it is, the other side for the VHF, UHF dual band antenna. And now you see we're buttoning everything back up, putting all the carpet back in into the trunk. And there, now it's nice. Everything's tucked away. Nothing's going to get hung up. And it's a nice, clean install. There they are. The little Tar Heel 2 and the Comet CA2X4SR. They ride nicely back there on that. Here's the 7000 under the driver's seat. Yeah, it's a little bit messy, but no one's going to be seeing it, so that's no big deal. There's the main thing right there, that piece of shield. That is grounding. That antenna will not tune without that ground. There's the turbo tuner, which allows me to hit the tune button on the front of the radio and jack that thing up and down. That way I don't have to mess with it. You got to hear it, too, so there's an MFJ clear tone. It's just laying there. It's not going anywhere. And there you go. Heads up for safety. It's nice in my eye line and nice place to hang the microphone. And that's it. The 7000's in the Solara.
Very nice.
Yeah, and the grounding strap is mounted to the seat bolt, so that's obviously a structural part of the car. It's got a really, really good ground. And that mount that I mounted the control head to is just a piece of sheet metal that's bent at a right angle, and I put some paint on it and some 3M trim adhesive, the kind of like really thick adhesive tape that you would use to put an emblem tape on the outside of your car, and it's not going anywhere either, but yet it will remove without leaving any residue whatsoever. So that worked out really nice. So yeah, I'm all happy. I've got the 7000 in the Toyota, and took a couple of weeks, I guess, to put that in, just kind of working here and there, but there you go. Speaking of Young Ham of the Year and youth, you remember back a few weeks ago we told you about the Rain Louisiana Ham Fest, the Acadiana ARA Ham Fest over in Rain, Louisiana. I showed you a little video of an eight-year-old who came up and wanted to meet me because he's a huge fan of Ham Nation. Well, if we can show the pictures now, let's show number one. There you see, that is Sam and his dad, Chad, there behind him. As soon as I walked in, he came up and wanted to talk to me. He took his test that day, and if we have picture number two, there we go. You see, they've got their call signs now. There's Uncle Brian, AF5JA. There's Dad Chad, KG5AYJ. And there is Sam, KG5AYI. They are very active on their local repeaters. And Sam, it's so funny. I talked to him on Echolink the other day, and he didn't recognize my voice. And he says, "Hi, this is KG5AYI. Are you a fan of Ham Nation?" He asks everyone about Ham Nation. He's totally hooked on it. And, Gordon, you'll be happy to know that if you'll show picture number three now, they are studying. Yeah, they've got your book, and they're studying for general. And, in fact, Chad tells me that that Sam is way ahead of him on studying. So wanted to bring that up to date. And they have a youth net, in fact, on the W5DDL repeater there in Lafayette, Louisiana. They're on Echolink. So if you go on Echolink and search for Whiskey 5 Delta Delta Lima, 7 o'clock Central Time on Thursday nights, they have a youth net. And Sam is usually on the youth net. And I checked in last week. They were on their way to the radio club meeting and got to talk to him on the radio for the first time. So, yeah, he's the coolest kid. He absolutely loves Ham Nation. And man, that's not a bad thing. So, Sam and Chad, glad to have you guys in the Ham Radio family. And speaking of the Ham Radio family, let's go up north a couple of hours from me, and let's see what Big Daddy George with the big honking smoking soldering iron is doing. What's going on, Big Daddy George?
Don, when I saw your mobile installation there, I thought for a moment you had stolen my mobile. You had the IC7000 there under the seat like mine. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You had the copper braid on there,
yep,
for the ground strap, just like mine. And you had a turbo tuner sitting beside it, just like mine.
Well, hey, let me tell you something. Anytime I can do anything just like you, that means I'm doing something just like right. So that makes me feel good.
Well, it's a nice installation. It really looked good, Don. I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Thank you.
Tonight, as I mentioned a moment ago, I've done something with my IC7700 over here. So let's go take a look.
In this age of digital technology, many radios have a firmware operating system that tells a radio how to behave. ICOM recently released a firmware upgrade for the IC7700, and I've been wanting to put it on mine, so that's what we're going to do today. The first thing we need to do is download the firmware. Here's the link at the ICOM Japan website. If that's too small to read, try this link right here. All the files are there for the firmware upgrade, as well as a couple of documents about the firmware. Once you've downloaded everything, there's a couple of notes that you need to read. If that's too small to read, try this. It's very important you read the manual so that you don't brick your radio. Now that I've downloaded the firmware, I'll put a USB memory stick into the IC7700, and I need to back up my memory settings. So I'll hit exit to get out of the scope. I'll press set. I'll press USB, and if this card has not already been formatted, I'll need to press Format. Now I'll press Save, and then I'll press the other Save button, and it'll prompt me to ask if I'm sure, and I'll click OK. And now we can see it's backing up the memory settings. Once that's complete, I'll click Load, and I'll look in the Settings folder to be sure that settings were actually saved. Now I need to copy the firmware to the USB drive, so I'll pull it out of the 7700 and hook it to my computer. Here's a zip file containing the firmware that I downloaded. I'll unzip that and copy the file back to the folder here, and we find a DAT file. I'm going to copy that now, and we'll paste it into the IC7700 folder on the USB memory stick. Now we'll put the thumb drive back into the IC7700, and it's indicating USB there, so we know it sees it. We need to press the exit button to get back out to the main screen here, and we'll hold down the firm up button for 1 second. A message appears, and we need to read that and pay careful attention. We'll scroll down to read the complete message, and then at the bottom it asks me, do I agree? I'll click OK, yes. And now we can see my firmware shown here. So we'll press the firm up button again, and it asks me if I want to start the update. I'll click OK, and now it's underway. We don't do anything with the rig, especially don't turn off the power. Once the file is loaded, it presents another dialog box. It says, please wait until this dialog disappears, and then reboot the 7700. That takes a little while, but eventually I get another screen that says the update is complete, and now I should power off the rig, power it back on, and then don't do anything until the normal operation screen appears. Now, these things have taken a little longer than you're seeing on the video here. I've edited it down so that we can get right to the point. The rig is rebooting now, and it looks like we're back. Now, the first thing I'm going to want to do is put my memory settings back in. So I press Set, USB, Load, and there's my memory settings right there. I press Load again. Am I sure? Yes, I'm sure. I'll press OK for the voice memory too. Yep, OK. And now reboot the 7700 once more. And now we're right back where we were. I've got the same frequency. Hey, I've got a waterfall too. How cool is that? If I press the audio button, I've got an audioscope display now. This really looks nice, but the thing I'm interested in is the remote control using the LAN connector on the rear. There's a number of other features in here as well. I don't even know them all yet, but I'll have to stumble through and see what I can find. So far, I'm really impressed, and I didn't break my radio. So, tip, follow the instructions carefully when you're going to do a firmware upgrade.
And I have not completely checked out everything yet. The rig is working. I've got it on the air. I kind of like that scope there. I'm still getting used to some of the advantages of having it there, and there are some. Didn't think so at first. I just thought it looked nice. But now that I've played with it a little bit, you can see noise and stuff on there, and it can kind of tip you into how you might want to adjust your filters. But as I mentioned, the thing I'm really interested in is that LAN port on the rear of it. Before, you could only use that to download new firmware into the rig. Well, now you can take that connector and plug it straight into your Ethernet router and put the radio right on the Internet. You don't need a computer between the radio and the Internet. Just plug straight in to your network there. And then you run the RSBA1 software on your laptop or whatever computer you got remotely, and you can access the rig that way. And it's my understanding that the audio actually travels over that as well. So no extra audio connections to do remote operation. That's really going to be nice, and I hope to play with that soon. And now that's not the only rig out there that's got firmware updates. Your rig could have a firmware update. You just need to check the manufacturer's website and see. And by all means, if you do find one there, make sure that it's newer than what you currently have on your rig and that you read the instructions carefully when you install it, because you could brick your radio if you're not careful. But that's it. 7700. Boy, it's almost like having a new radio, and a lot of fun. And it went relatively painless, too. So in our contest last week, you know, we had Joe Walsh on the show here, and we asked the question, what movie did both Joe Walsh and Steven Spielberg have cameo appearances in? And we were going to draw five winners, and those five winners are going to win one of these Howl Sound T-shirts over here. And our winners were Bob, KB9VGO, Wilson Barnes, Into CST, Dan Kirby, KK5TH, Bill Roding, W4BRZ, and Steve, KD6ADW. And they knew the answer. And the answer was the Blues Brothers. And I think Brian's got a little clip right here of that actual cameo appearance. There's Joe.
Wow.
I couldn't find anything of Steven Spielberg, but hey, I think Joe was having a little more fun there anyway. Hopefully we can have him back here again before too much longer. For next week, though, we're going to give away a copy of Antennas from the Ground Up, a great book by L.B. Siebeck. It covers a lot of good information on antennas in layman's terms, and it gets a little bit deeper, but not so deep that you can't understand it. In other words, it's not bogged down with math and physics and all that kind of stuff. It's an every ham's type of book. If you'd like to win that, then answer this question. L.B. Siebeck wrote a column for the Colorado QRP Club. What was the title of the column? And if you think you know the answer to that, send me your answer to hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win. And one other thing I want to mention, you see Randy, K7AGE, there in the chat room from YouTube fame. Randy's going to be joining us Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central Daylight Time at AmateurLogic.tv for our recording of the next episode. We'll be streaming that live, so go there and check that out, and we're going to learn a little more about K7AGE. And right now, I think it's time to go to the Yellow Brick Road. Good evening, Dale.
Hey, George. Good evening. Good to see you tonight. I like your shirt there. Nice and bright. And we've got a jam-packed session for you tonight. A current event, a Show Me Your Shack, and another club website. So let's jump right in to the outstanding coverage of the 2014 AES Superfest held this past weekend. And with that report, here's Dan, N9LVS.
Welcome to AES Superfest 2014. There was quite a few prizes given away from manufacturers including Kenwood, Elenco, ICOM, TimeWave, West Mountain Radio, Yaesu, and Unified Microsystems. Phil Parton showed up to show off the TS-990 with its TFT display, numerous roofing filters, and DSP. Dennis Machenbacher was showing off the new DR1 Fusion repeater, as well as the 1DR handhelds and the 400DR mobile digital radios. ICOM had a very good display. For HF, they had everything from the IC7800 with all its bells and whistles to the new IC7100 with its very sleek design. In VHF and UHF handhelds, from the ID31A to the IC92AD, and mobiles from the IC2300H to the IC2820H. From the ARRL, Bob Innerbitzen, NQ1R, Dick Isley, W9GIG, Central Division Director, and Gary Sorensen, W9ULK, Wisconsin Section Manager, was also there. Bob Innerbitzen talked to people about what's going on at the ARRL headquarters, as well as signing people up or renewing their membership with the American Radio Relay League. While Dick and Gary talked to all kinds of people from Wisconsin and surrounding states about the advantages of ARRL membership and ARRL's 100th anniversary celebration, West Mountain Radio had all their DC products, including power gates, power guards, and power isolators, as well as DC power on the go. West Mountain Radio also had all their Rig Blaster interfaces, everything from the Rig Blaster Pro, which gives you all the amenities, all the way to the Rig Talk, which gives you basic rig control. cable experts who has everything from ground braiding to rope, as well as any kind of coax you need. Larson Antennas had a wide variety of mobile antennas, from VHF all the way to dual band UHF VHF antennas. Unless we not forget, some of the clubs and organizations from around Wisconsin set up booths to show what they're doing in ham radio or to promote their ham fest. There were also forums from Wisconsin Aries Racies and the history of the Milwaukee Amateur Radio Club, as well as a forum on fox hunting. And the demo area was kept really busy, with people trying out different radios and antennas all day long. And that was AES Superfest 2014.
Well, thanks, Dan. Dan is really the Swiss Army knife of Ham Nation Videos. He runs our hamnationvideos.info website, where you can review any of the videos we've shown you here on Ham Nation. Well, the club website of the week is W1NRG.com. Comes to us from the Meriden Amateur Radio Club in Connecticut. The site was nominated by Joe Ham, KC1BAQ. The Meriden Club is one of the oldest in Connecticut, and it's just updated the website to better serve the needs of hams in that Connecticut area. It includes an active forum and a chat room, and anyone can view the forum without being a member of the club. The graphics are just absolutely beautiful. Check it out. Take a test drive. www.w1nrg.com. Well, let's jump right in now to tonight's episode of Show Me Your Shack. This is Show Me Your Shack, a look at ham shack photos received this month. Mike W1MWB lives in Wells, Maine, and he's legally blind. He shows us a closer shot of his TS-2000, which is his primary station. He also owns an ICOM ID-880H for D-Star and Echolink, and owns an old Kenwood 7625, which he's currently not using but keeps around because it's so different. Dave NT9E sent photos of his shack, which includes an ICOM HF radio, an amplifier, and a lot of accessory gear. Dave operates all modes from 160 meters to 70 centimeters. Nick W5NSA is working temporarily in Warsaw, Poland, where he uses the call SO5NSA. This is his temporary shack, which includes a Yaesu FT847, an MD100 microphone, and a Waksun KG-UV6D. He travels between Tucson and Warsaw quite often. Dale KD8UAU sent us this club station photo Tri-State Amateur Radio Association at the Museum of Radio and Technology in Huntington, West Virginia. They hold their meetings at 7 o'clock on the third Tuesday of the month. Everyone is welcome. Jeff KC9TEW from Crown Point, Indiana, is the happy owner of Heil ProSet products. This photo of his console shows his FT2000 and his backup rig, an IC7000, which he uses primarily on 2-meter single sideband. He's just purchased a microphone boom and foot switch from DX Engineering and told us that aesthetics are just as important to him as sound quality. Dan WA9CYR sent us photos of his Friday afternoon project, a 17-meter rotary dipole constructed from junk parts, sweat, and a lot of accumulated pain in the back and legs. The coil in the center is a 12-gauge copper wire wound on a 1-inch form. The elements needed to be longer for this band, so instead of adding more 3/4-inch tubing, which would increase the weight, he used elements from an old TV antenna, fastened them with hose clamps. When finished, Dan sprayed on Flex Seal to waterproof the connections and coax. To adjust the antenna, he mounted it on a 7-foot pole and secured it to his son's riding lawnmower. His 4-year-old son, Aiden, got very upset when he saw what Dan was doing. He told his dad he didn't need an antenna that big on his lawnmower. His dad said, "Sure I do. I can use it to pick up a lot of stations." Aiden was still upset later that evening. The project took 3 hours, cost nothing, and Dan didn't need a Smith chart. Randy, K7AGE, told us we needed some messy shack photos for Ham Nation, so he sent one. This is the before shot, taken while he was installing another piece of gear. The little project became a big project. But the project ended successfully, and this is the looks of Randy's shack after the operation. Joe, KC1BAQ, sent this picture of his modest ham shack. He just got his technician license in January and upgraded to general in February. Joe bought the old Kenwood TS-430 for parts, but tinkered a while, and the rig's on the air now. He modified it and its remote port to use the signal link USB modem so he could operate the digital modes. He built a 16-foot, 10-meter dipole, strung it up on the balcony, and has been able to work the world, including the Winter Olympic Special Station RG22RQ on 15 meters. He also worked Japan on JT-65. And to wrap up our shack photos, we traveled to Victoria, Australia, to the shack of Craig, VK3NCR. Craig runs an IC7000, an IT100 antenna tuner, and feeds an OCF 80-meter dipole. He just plugged in his new SM30 desk mic. Craig's been a ham since 2007. He loves it. And that's it for April's shack photos. We'd like to show your shack here on Ham Nation 2, so make sure to send a photo or two to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv. For guidelines, please do check hamnationvideos.info. Didn't you love that club station there in West Virginia? Fantastic. And speaking of show me your shack, we've got some creative hams out there. Chris Kirk is KG4GSX. He's in Dandridge, Tennessee. That's in the heart of the Smoky Mountains. And he's a regular on the Ham Nation 40-meter post-show net. He sent us a short video of his shack. Let's watch.
KG4GSX, Chris, also known as the Hoppin' Mad Hillbilly, and I wanted to take a second to show you my shack. A lot of folks, a lot of guys and ladies that are hams always have a little bit of a dilemma figuring out a way to wedge a ham station into their home. I sort of did it the opposite way. I wedged a home into a ham shack. Just a quick look around. This is one of my newest little toys, and that's the Elecraft KX3, nice little machine. Of course, we've got to see the local news on the TV here. This particular computer is pretty well dedicated to a bunch of ham radio gadgets and weather gadgets and time gadgets that I continually run on this machine. Keeps me updated on sunspots and the like. Well, folks, this is by far the most effective piece of ham radio gear I've ever owned. It's a Tentec 715 RF speech processor, and I won't here, with the short time we have, get into the technical advantages that Tentec uses by converting the AF to RF during their clipping and compression, but basically, I work the world when a lot of guys I know that have amplifiers can't cut through the DX. I promise you, the reason a commercial gets your attention is because it takes all of that signal and pushes it up to the FCC maximum level. It's no louder, but it's perceived louder. And that's what happens to your signal with a Tentec 715.
Well, thanks, Chris, for that creative approach to show me your shack. Kind of like it. Talk to you soon on 7278. Well, this segment is all about your videos, so please send them along with your shack photos to Ham Nation Videos at twit.tv, and we'll get them on Ham Nation for you. Well, that's it for tonight. Have a great week. Cheryl's up next with news and questions from the chat room. But first, let's check in with George for the latest from ICOM. And George, I hear you get to visit the ICOM headquarters next week. That sounds like a lot of fun.
That's kind of up in the air right now, Dale. It's been scheduled. We've been planning it for a long time. But there's been some things come up out there that Ray is probably going to have to be out of the office next week, so we may have to postpone that a little bit. But right now, let's take a look at ID's brand new mobile rig.
Last year, ICOM introduced the IC7100 touchscreen mobile to rave reviews.
Now, ICOM's doing it again, taking innovation and mobility to the next level. This time, they're announcing the new ID5100A, a VHF-UHF dual-band digital transceiver. ICOM's mobile radio features a large responsive 5.5-inch touchscreen with software keypad and independent main dials, volume, and squelch for A and B bands. The ID5100A also includes an integrated GPS receiver, position, course, speed, and altitude are displayed. The GPS antenna is located in the remote head, so no external GPS antenna is required. And there's a great DV and FM analog repeater list function that uses the GPS position info to display repeaters near you. The dual-band receiver offers VHF-UHF, VHF-VHF, and UHF-UHF simultaneous receive capabilities. Digital functions include D-Star DV mode operation, dual-watch receivers, D-plus reflector linking, and enhanced DPRS. An optional Bluetooth unit supports headsets for hands-free communications. And there's the free RS-MS-1A Android app available for download on Google Play that offers a number of useful remote features. The ID5100A has 50 watts output power for both VHF and UHF, an SD card slot for recording and playing back QSOs, CS5100 cloning software, and much more. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation for more information on ICOM's ID5100A D-Star Mobile.
And if you like that rig, well, how would you like to win one? After each episode of Ham Nation, you can tune in and register to win by going to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and throwing your name in the hat for some great weekly swag prizes that they're giving away from the ICOMSwagStore.com. But you'll also be registered if you win in the grand prize drawing. And for April, it's going to be that all-new ID5100A, dual-watch mobile with 50 watts of power on both VHF and UHF, plus touchscreen, D-Star built-in GPS, SD card storage, Android remote control, available Bluetooth connectivity, and a lot more. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after this episode of Ham Nation and after each episode, and register to win. And now I believe it's time that we bring Cheryl in, and we hope you've been giving her some questions because we've got a few minutes here that we can take your questions. Hi, Cheryl. Good to see you again.
Hi there, George. Great to see you too, and nice job tonight, by the way. And we have a beautiful spring day here in Chicago. It's really quite nice. It's 60 degrees. We're not used to that here, so we're spoiled today. But I'll tell you what, there's quite a lot of things in the chat room here, and it's kind of important that, you know, I've got something that special that I had planned too here for Gordo. So I'm going to ask you, Ryan, or whoever might be running the console right now, to bring in picture number one. And this is all about you tonight, Gordo. We're celebrating you.
Oh, my God.
I know that, dude. You are who you are. This is a great shot of you. And can you tell us possibly, do you remember when this was or where?
It was in a radio room somewhere in Radio Land.
Nice shot of you there, by the way, Gordo. And can we have picture number two, please?
Yeah, that's Dayton. And we want to remind everybody, May 16, 17, and 18, the Dayton Hamvention. And many of your hosts and hostesses will be at Dayton. And we'll be looking forward to seeing you there middle of May. Back to you, Cheryl.
Okay, and then there's two more, so hang in there with me, because three and four are kind of together. So there's one, and what do we see there on that chair there? Can you explain that, Gordo?
Yes, that is our CW Keir, and it's like a digital mode, which they call ASCII, pronounced ASCII. Well, this is a more analog version of the ASCII CW sender.
Okay, and last picture, please. Thanks, guys. There's one more with the tan legs there, as usual. The guys, you're always tan, Gordo. It's amazing. But I bring this to you. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You wanted to make one more comment. We want to hear from you.
Well, it was, we need ways to get kids involved. And those that were practicing CW wanted to try something different. So we've seen the QLF CW sender. But this came from Chip Margelli, K7JA. And, of course, he calls it the ASCII Keir.
Shocker.
That's pretty good. And by the way, I thought you passed the pop quiz. That was really a pop quiz for you. So you passed and you get your license today. And I just wanted to mention, everyone, that Gordon West is probably the best guy I know to help train anybody that wants to improve their license or get their very first one. He actually offers the very finest in ham radio study training materials that does a lot more than just crunch the Q&A. So I encourage you to go there and look at his website. He relates the question pool to the real world of playing ham radio wherever they go. And I really wanted you to check out Gordo's website because we're celebrating him of the fine job he's done for many, many years here. So please visit his website at www.gordonwestradioschool.com. And now let's go back to the questions. I do have some questions here that were pretty good here in the chat room. So, and for the gang. But Gordo, since we have you already, we have the first cue is, what's your concern about the inexpensive Chinese dual band radios? What is to like and what is not so preferred about the Chinese dual band radios? Over to you.
Well, I happen to have some here. I like them because they're inexpensive, $49 to $95. And they're good quality. They have great audio. They have neat little LEDs. But the problem with the Chinese handhelds for the new ham is that they are more difficult to program unless you have a PAL that's going to help you program it. And I'm very happy to say that our buddy Clint Bradford, K6LCS, he's got a new service called hamradioprogramming.com. And his service is programming specifically these inexpensive Chinese handhelds. So log on to his webpage, hamradioprogramming.com, and see if he can help you out. So, Cheryl, I like the Chinese handhelds, but they are difficult to program. And some, since they're part 90, are really designed not to be programmed once they come into the country. And I mean, how are you going to program this without a keypad? Well, if you had a computer, sure. But in an emergency, and we're going to be discussing this at the Nevada State Convention that I'll be at May 30, 31, and June 1st in Virginia City, our California Rescue Ares group will be there. And we're going to be talking about how to get these inexpensive handhelds programmed up properly for those in the emergency comm field. Back to you, Cheryl.
Hey, thanks, Gordo. And on another note regarding the similar Chinese radios, can you clear up the mystery on what's allowed to be programmed into those Chinese radios? You know, the part with the Part 90 certification, can volunteer fire frequency, search rescue, FRS and GMRS, those types of things, multi-use radio service and marine band channels, can that be programmed in there for transmit and receive?
And the answer is, on any radio, yes, with the proper programming software, or if the radio needs to be modified for Mars and Coast Guard auxiliary, certainly. Hams can do their own programming and put in anything and everything. Where the problem occurs is if they're told that the Part 90 Chinese handhelds can work any band, any service. Not really. The MERS, multi-use radio service, has restrictions, and it's a Part 95 service. Family radio service requires a antenna that is non-removable, so that would leave out the Part 90 Chinese handheld radio. And the GMRS service, unless it's a grandfathered, very old land mobile radio, it too would not meet the Part 90 specs because GMRS is Part 95. So again, no problem having these services in the radio, including the transmit side, but just don't be caught transmitting on a frequency on a radio that is not type accepted or type approved for that particular part. And Part 90 covers a lot, but not the Part 95 radios.
Hey, Cheryl, I've got something for you on these radios. One thing that I like about them is they seem to be incredibly feature rich for the price. Like, for instance, a true dual band, which would be great for working satellites because you need to hear both the VHF and the UHF be able to transmit and receive at the same time. So a true dual band. And I noticed that, I believe it's, is it the Baofeng, the 8B, the UV-8B, I think it is. I think it's the Baofeng radio is coming out that actually has full crossband repeat. And I haven't really seen crossband repeat on an HT in a long time. The last one I can remember, I think, is my old Yaesu FT530, which again is a true dual band radio, and has cross band repeat and is a great radio for working those satellites. But my God, back 25 years ago, when I bought that radio, you couldn't buy that for what the price of these Chinese radios are now. So there's a lot of features for the money on those Chinese radios, but the key is, man, you got to buy the programming cable and program those with your computer, Cheryl.
Absolutely, that is so true. No front panel programming. Even if they had it, it's forget about it. It's not good. So let's move on to a couple more here. I have and Gordo, I hate to pick on you, but you probably have the answer to this one from Phil CS7AFP. He wanted to know, what's the best antenna to work the International Space Station, the ISS, a Helix, or what kind of antenna system? What can you recommend?
Well, working the International Space Station, again, Clint Bradford at his hamradioprogramming.com. He's the expert there. But, he works it all day long with just a little three-element aero antenna, and he moves it somewhat vertical to track his own audio that he hears. As Don was saying, on dual band, full duplex, we can hear his own audio. So, nope, you don't need a Helix. You don't need a cross-polarized antenna. Just that great little aero antenna, three or four elements is all you need to easily work the space station if they are up on the air.
Sure, absolutely. That does matter, of course, if they're there to get the transmission, of course. All right, thank you very much, Gordo, and it was a pleasure to see you out in California there. Excellent. So let's go to George, Mr. Smoke and Solder. I hope that your connection is up here, and I do have one from Brian. He's been in here quite a lot, W4BKB. He says, is there anything that you need to do if you use RG59 for coax feed line? What's your recommendation? Over to you, George.
Well, you probably want an antenna tuner right behind your rig so that you can tune it, because it'll match it down to 50 ohms. And also your antenna, it would be best if its feed point impedance was 75 ohms. It can be done. I've got a friend who made a really nice vertical and used about a 200-foot run of RG6 cable so he could hide it out in the woods behind his apartment. And he had quite a respectable signal.
Okay, great. Thank you. And also we have Jerry, WR5G. He says that he would like to ask you if you have any videos showing how to properly and easily solder the 7-pin and 8-pin DIN connectors. Didn't you just have that one used for the accessory inputs on most modern ham rigs? Was that something you covered, George?
After better than 200 videos, I can't remember exactly what I've covered.
That's true.
But I believe it was a 13-pin that I covered in the last week or so. There could be one where I did the 7 or 8 pin. It would be very similar. Actually, it would be a lot easier than that 13 pin was.
Oh, yeah, you betcha. Okay, and then we have KD4, John, KD4, UBM. He says, what frequency is on George's radio? So I don't think he could see that. So I don't know if there's a close-up or you've got a frequency dialed in. I hope you didn't change it from when he typed that in. Did you move it or was it always there?
It was always here, 14.268, which is where I think the 20-meter net will be tonight. But we'll have to wait to the last minute and see if that frequency is busy and where they actually land.
All right, then. And can you put on your engineer hat for just one last question here? From N3ROC, Jim, he says, can you tell him if an outdoor coax should ever be replaced after 10 years outside? He does not own a Megger. Over to you, George.
Yeah, maybe. By the way, this is my Heil sound engineering hat here.
There you go.
Yeah, and I'm going to be giving away some of those in the future. But, yeah, possibly after 10 years, you might want to. A Megger would be a great way to test it. If the cable's been, protected at both ends and there's no way that water's gotten into it and UV rays haven't broken down the insulation, it may still be okay after 10 years. I don't know. Let's ask the expert about that. Gordo, what do you say?
Yeah, I agree with you that if the cable was protected, maybe in a PVC pipe, not just laying on a hot roof, it'll probably go 20 years. However, if it was inexpensive cable with a jacket that was not rated non-contaminating, then probably it's got cracks in it. So I agree with you, George. Check it out carefully. Look at the ends, and if it looks bad at all, then scrap the coax. Send it to me out here in California, and I'll resuscitate it. But get from DX Engineering 50 feet or 100 feet with connectors on it, and their coax is the best.
All right. And one final quick one for you, George, because I promised web number 8494. He says, when using old boat anchor gear, how often should one empty the grid leaks? And I'll let you finish that. Go ahead. Take it away, George.
Well, a lot of these already have grid leak resistors in them, so you don't have to worry about emptying it.
There you go. Very nice. Thanks, guys. And thank you, Don, as well, for putting other answers in and adding to that thing on the Chinese radios we discussed. And I just wanted to say thank you, everybody, for your questions. And I will be on the after show QSO, as always, from here on in, every show afterwards on 3.847 megahertz, unless it is used, then we would have to move, of course. But that's its general location. And I'll be looking to take your check-ins, as usual. And I wanted to just say thank you so much, Brian, Alex, and Karsten, for getting those pictures in last minute there, I might add. And we appreciate all your good work. So, and Gordo, it's been a real slice. Everyone, have a great night. And I'm Cheryl Lessig for Ham Nation, K9VIK. Bye.
Thanks, Cheryl. Great job. Always nice to have you on here. And thanks to the chat room, too, for the great questions. We love answering those. Hey, we've got 40 and 20-meter nets as well as that 80-meter net. George, what are those frequencies tonight? Do we know?
I believe that 40 meters is going to be on 7.278 or right about there. 20 meters, 14.268. And are right about there, and unless that frequency is already busy. Echo Link is on star, do drop in star, node number 355-800, and D-Star, reflector 14, module C.
Yeah, I was on 14 Charlie early this morning, in fact, from work with my new little 51. I talked to one of those 7100s, and boy, those things sound good. So, yeah, get on the D-Star and have some fun. I'll try to be on there again tomorrow morning from work if I have some spare time. So that looks like it's going to do it for Ham Nation, holding the fort down for Bob, who is at the NAB convention. And I don't believe he'll be here next week either, and I won't be here next week. I'll be visiting the Mouse down in Orlando. So George and everyone else will hold the fort down for those of us who are on the road. So thank you all for watching. Good night, and we will see you all next week. 73 from Ham Nation.
73.